Aren't you glad you're a Christian? Let's say our memory verse from last week here, James 5, 19 and 20. My brethren, if any among you strays from the truth and one turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. Amen. I heard about a junior high teacher who gave a lecture on the properties of magnets. And the next day he decided to give his students a quiz. And the first question, which he thought was just a throwaway question, it read like this. My name begins with an M, has six letters, and I pick things up. What am I? Well, half of the kids in the class wrote mother. Happy Mother's Day. I thought I'd start with some Mother's Day facts and statistics, which I found online, so I'll just run through these. Back in 1914, that's 107 years ago, President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed Mother's Day a national holiday for the second Sunday of May, and he established the day as, quote, a public expression of our love and reverence for the mothers of our country. Well, before that, Anna Maria Jarvis is the one who was generally credited with getting the holiday started, which took quite a bit of work. But very interestingly, she spent the later part of her life trying to get the holiday stopped. She was very disappointed. She thought that it had been commercialized way too much, and she was even arrested one time for disturbing the peace at a Mother's Day celebration. Well, at one point early on, wearing a carnation was a very popular trend on Mother's Day, and wearing a red carnation meant that your mother was still alive, and wearing a white one meant that she had passed. Now, as far as I know, that's not practiced anymore, but carnations are still connected to this holiday, and so after worship services, we have a carnation for each of the ladies. Well, this year, shoppers are expected to spend nearly $28 billion on Mother's Day, according to a survey by the National Retail Federation. And people, they certainly give a wide variety of gifts to their mothers. But Mother's Day is one of the top three flower-giving holidays, along with Christmas and Valentine's Day, of course. And the same is true for greeting cards. Mother's Day is the busiest day of the year for restaurants. And many restaurants will get 60 to 70% increase in revenue on Mother's Day. And more phone calls are made on Mother's Day than any other day of the year. Now, for our young people, that is a rotary phone. There are some funny videos on YouTube with kids trying to figure out how to use one of those. Okay, here's a bonus. Since the first sound that a baby will make is often the muh sound, well, in the majority of the languages of the world, the word for mother begins with the letter M. Now, I know that this can be a very difficult holiday for those of you who have lost mothers or who have lost children or who struggle with infertility. But you need to know that you have a God who has not forgotten you. And for the rest of us, we need to be sensitive about that, and we need to be there for them as mothers and as children in this spiritual Christian family. Well, I am certainly happy to live in a country where mothers are honored. As every student of the Bible knows, parental respect, it's a part of God's plan. The fifth of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 20, my son, observe the commandment of your father and do not forsake the teaching of your mother. Proverbs 15, 20, a wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish man despises his mother. Proverbs 23, 22, listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. And Proverbs 30:11 speaks with a very negative tone. There is a kind of man who curses his father and does not bless his mother. And it later talks about the eye that mocks a father and scorns a mother in verse 17. Well, Proverbs 31, it speaks of the woman whose children rise up and bless her. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 3. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Not for they are always right, but for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. One very practical way is she tells you to look both ways before crossing the street. Now, what I would like to do this year is for us to take a look at some of the mothers that we find in the Bible. See what we can learn from them. And I've chosen a few from the Old Testament and a few from the New. And so if you have a Bible handy, let's start in Exodus chapter 2. The first one is Jochebed, the mother of Moses. Now, Moses, of course, he was the one to deliver the Israelites from their Egyptian bondage. He was the one who brought them the law down from Mount Sinai. Numbers chapter 12 and verse 3 tells us of his great humility. And Deuteronomy 34:10 says that since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. So, what about his mother? Well, we learn from Exodus chapter 1 that the Israelites, there were so many Israelites that the Pharaoh, he got afraid, and he ordered that the Israelite boys were to be killed. Well, let's read Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. The woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was beautiful, most mothers think that, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got him a wicker basket and covered it over with tar and pitch. Then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to find out what would happen to him. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile with her maidens walking alongside the Nile. And she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid, and she brought it to her. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the boy was crying. And she had pity on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you?" Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go ahead." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. The child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. But, Hebrews chapter 11 tells us, "By faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward," speaking of the heavenly reward. So where did he get that from? Well, not from the wisdom of the Egyptians, not from Pharaoh's daughter. Now, I think he learned it from his mother, who got to be an influence in his young life. You see, he was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians. Acts chapter 7, verse 22. He had wealth and power being connected to Pharaoh's daughter. But I think his mother taught him that there are more important things in life than wealth and power. All right, let's go now to Judges. We'll go to Judges chapter 13. The next one is Samson's mother. And yes, Samson was a mess. There's no argument. But God used him as a blunt instrument, as a blunt weapon against the Philistines. And sure enough, there are some good mothers who end up with sons who make bad choices. All right, so let's read Judges chapter 13, verses 1 through 5. Now, the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord. so that the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines 40 years. There was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had borne no children. Then the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, "Behold, now you are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and give birth to a son. Now therefore be careful not to drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. For behold, you shall conceive and give birth to a son, and no razor shall come upon his head. For the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb." Now that was a person who was consecrated to God with a special vow. "And he shall begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines." Well, she obeyed these instructions coming from God, which of course is a good quality. And verse 24 says, "Then the woman gave birth to a son and named him Samson. And the child grew up and the Lord blessed him." Now, as a side, verse 9 mentions her being out in the field. And some people believe that that shows that she was a hard worker. Now, let's take a look at chapter 14, verses 1 through 3. "Then Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. So he came back and told his father and mother, 'I saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me as a wife.' Then his father and his mother said to him, 'Is there no woman among the daughters of your relatives or among all our people that you go to take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?'" In other words, someone who is not one of God's people, those who don't follow God. A good mother is concerned with whom her children marry. And that is why some people suggest that you start talking to your children about it while they are young, and that you start praying for their future spouse. Okay, let's turn to 1 Samuel chapter 1. The next one I want to look at is Hannah, the mother of Samuel. Samuel is a great prophet, priest, and judge. Now, he was the one who anointed the first two kings of Israel. He was also known for his emphasis on prayer. So, what about his mother? Well, in 1 Samuel chapter 1, we learn that Hannah was the favorite wife of Elkanah. He had two wives. The problem was she was barren, and the other wife, being jealous no doubt, would just cause her grief. She was said to provoke her bitterly because of it. Now, it's another example in Scripture of polygamy not working. But let's read what happened one year. They went up to Shiloh to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord. 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 9 through 18. "Then Hannah rose after eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She, greatly distressed, prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. She made a vow and said, 'O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me, and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor shall never come on his head.' Now it came about, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli was watching her mouth. As for Hannah, she was speaking in her heart, only her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. So Eli thought she was drunk. Then Eli said to her, 'How long will you make yourself drunk? Put away your wine from you.'" I mean, maybe he jumped to that conclusion because it was something very common in that day. I don't know. "But Hannah replied, 'No, my Lord, I am a woman oppressed in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant as a worthless woman, for I have spoken until now out of my great concern and provocation.'" And you notice how she didn't blow up at him for his false accusation. "Then Eli answered and said, 'Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant your petition that you have asked of him.' She said, 'Let your maidservant find favor in your sight, So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Prayer can often do that. So if God would give her a son, she would dedicate that son to the Lord for a lifelong Levitical service and Nazirite vow. Well, sure enough, the Lord granted her petition, and she gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, which means name of God or heard of God. And although she had waited so long for that son, although she wanted him so badly, she held up her end of the bargain, and she put him into Eli's care after he was weaned. Now, from what I've read from Israelite tradition, it was probably around three. But she visited him every year, and she made him a new garment every year. You see, some people believe that when a child is 3 years old, his or her parents will have done more than half of all they will ever do to impact that child's character. Well, Samuel, he became one of the greatest leaders that Israel ever had. And I think it's partly because his mother left an imprint upon him. So besides her early teaching, he knew that he came into this world because of his mother praying. Now, I think that's where his emphasis on prayer came from. And he knew that his mother had kept her promise, that she had kept her promise to God, and how important that is. And she dedicated him to the Lord, which gave him purpose and priority. Okay, next. The next one is the mother in 1 Kings 3, where we find the episode with King Solomon. And it's an example of his wisdom. Well, a child had died, and two different women were saying that the child was theirs. But it was just one woman's word against the other. They didn't have DNA testing yet. So let's read 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 24 through 27. The king said, "Give me a sword." So they brought a sword before the king. The king said, "Divide the living child in two and give half to the one and half to the other." Then the woman whose child was the living one spoke to the king, for she was deeply stirred over her son and said, "Oh, my lord, give her the living child, and by no means kill him." But the other said, "He shall be neither mine nor yours. Divide him." Then the king said, "Give the first woman the living child, and by no means kill him. She is his mother." See, Solomon knew that a mother will do almost anything to protect her child. Let's turn over here to Luke chapter 1. Let's go to the New Testament now. And I want us to look at Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist. Well, John's job, of course, was to get the people ready for the Messiah. The angel said that he would come in the spirit and power of Elijah. And in Luke chapter 7, Jesus said that John, he was more than a prophet. And of those born among women, well, there's no one greater than John the Baptist. So, what about his mother? Let's read Luke chapter 1, verses 5 through 7. In the days of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zacharias of the division of Abijah. And he had a wife from the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. They were both righteous in the sight of God, walking blamelessly in all the commandments and requirements of the Lord. But they had no child, because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both advanced in years. Okay, take a look at verse 6. See, they were both righteous in the sight of God, not just one, but both of them, walking blamelessly in all the commandments and requirements of the Lord. Not just the commandments they like, not just the ones that are easy, but all of them. Well, the Lord allowed Elizabeth to become pregnant. And we can see from verse 25 just how grateful she was. She definitely saw this child as a gift from God. And we can read some of the things that she said to Mary in verses 39 through 45. Elizabeth, I would say she was obviously an influence on Mary, a good influence. So how did John get to be such a great man? Well, I believe part of it came from his godly mother and her influence in his life. All right, well, another mother we can look at is Mary, the mother of Jesus. Now, we are not told why God chose her, other than her and her husband were descendants of King David, of course, but I suspect it had something to do with her character. Well, the angel told her what was going to happen, and in Luke chapter 1, we find her very humble response. "Behold, the Lord's bondservant, may it be done to me according to your word." And we also find her prayer or her song, whatever it might be, in verses 46 through 55, about God's power to change circumstances. And twice in Luke, when something happened with Jesus, it says that she treasured all these things in her heart. Now, I think that's probably true of most mothers when it comes to their children. Okay, next, let's turn over to Matthew chapter 15. All right, this is where we find the Canaanite mother, and this is a passage that confuses some folks. Maybe a good question for the box. But let's read here Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 through 28. "Jesus went away from there and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon. And a Canaanite woman from that region came out and began to cry out, saying, 'Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed.' But he did not answer her a word." So I think he was saying if she would give up or not. "And his disciples came and imploring him, saying, 'Send her away because she keeps shouting at us.' But he answered and said, 'I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel.' But she came and began to bow down before him, saying, 'Lord, help me.' And he answered and said, 'It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs.'" You see, the Jews often called him that. Although Jesus softened it a bit, he used the word here for a little dog, speaking of a family pet. This is the term for a house dog and not a wild scavenger dog. "But she said, 'Yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from the master's table.' Then Jesus said to her, 'Oh, woman, your faith is great. It shall be done for you as you wish.' And her daughter was healed at once." So I think he was obviously testing her faith. But notice her dogged determination, excuse the pun, in behalf of her daughter. She wasn't going to take no for an answer. And I sometimes find it amazing what a mother will go through for her children. And I'm sure you have many stories from your own life. I certainly do. Many mothers, they will do whatever it takes to make sure their children are okay. Okay, the next one is Paul's mother. Okay, like many Jews, it may be that when Paul became a Christian, his family disowned him. But he was able to say this in Romans chapter 16. "Greet Rufus, a choice man in the Lord, also his mother and mine." Romans 16, 13. Now, it's possible that this Rufus is the same Rufus of Mark chapter 15 and verse 21, the son of the man who helped Jesus carry his cross. But it sounds like this guy's physical mother had become a spiritual mother to Paul. I don't know, maybe she had a home somewhere along Paul's missionary route. Maybe there was a special room that was always ready for the weary missionary. Maybe there was a favorite dish that her missionary son really liked. Maybe she offered him words of encouragement from time to time, as mothers often do for their physical sons, and so forth. But, you know, I've actually had quite a few of these spiritual mothers in my life. Well, the last one I want us to look at is Eunice, the mother of Timothy. Okay, even before becoming a missionary with Paul, Acts 16:2 says that he was well spoken of by the brethren in Lystra and Iconium. And in Philippians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul even went so far as to say that he had no one of kindred spirit like Timothy who would be as genuinely concerned for their welfare. And he talked about his proven worth as he served with Paul in the furtherance of the gospel. So, what about his mother? Well, we learn from Acts chapter 16 and verse 1 that his father was a Greek but his mother was a Jewish Christian. Well, in 2 Timothy chapter 1, in verse 5, Paul said, "I am mindful of the sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I am sure that it is in you as well." His mother had not just passed on any old faith, but she taught him to be sincere in his faith. And take a look at chapter 3, 2 Timothy chapter 3. "You, however, continue in the things you have learned and become convinced of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the sacred writings, which are able to give you the wisdom that leads to salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus." She also taught him the Word of God. How did Timothy become such a great young evangelist that Paul could rely so much on? Well, it wasn't because of his Greek father. Some of the sons in these examples, they became just great men, and at least part of it was due, I believe, to their mothers. And what did they learn from their mothers? Not that the most important thing in life is a degree with letters after your name. Not that the most important thing in life is to have a dynamic career and make lots of money. Not that the most important thing in life is to have great power and prestige. Not that the most important thing in life is to become a movie star or a sports star. Not that the most important thing in life is to have an attractive spouse and attractive children. No, it was what? That the most important thing in life is to be a godly person and to make it to heaven, bringing as many people with you as possible. See, the question is, will you do that for your sons and daughters? I believe that mothers are a wonderful gift to us from God. And so whether or not we had a godly mother, let's love and honor them. And let's make an extra effort on this day. Now, I definitely believe they deserve those flowers and cards and those gifts. But every day they deserve our honor and respect. I've heard the advice, when looking for a spouse, take a look at how they treat their mother. It's been said, our attitudes and actions toward our mothers tell a great deal about us. Her children rise up and bless her.